The headlines: a plane carrying 72 people crashes, landing in Nepal. At least 44 people are confirmed dead. Russia warns that the UK's plan to supply Ukraine with tanks and other heavy weaponry will escalate the war in the country. And Peru declares a state of emergency in the capital, Lima, and three other regions due to continued protests. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisum Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. At least 67 people are confirmed dead in Nepal after an aircraft went down in the western Pokhara region. The army says that they expect to find more bodies as the plane broke into pieces after crashing into the hillside. The plane was carrying 72 people, including two infants and 10 foreign nationals. Local officials say there are some survivors. Nepal's prime minister has called an emergency cabinet meeting. Deadly plane incidents are common in Nepal, which is studded with eight of the world's highest mountains, including Everest. Such incidents have killed at least 309 people in the country in the past 22 years. Russia has warned that the UK's bid to supply Ukraine with heavy tanks will escalate the war with Ukraine. The Russian embassy in the UK says the tanks will also cause more casualties, including among civilians. The UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak made this pledge to deliver 14 Challenger 2 tanks and additional artillery system during a phone call with Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky. Ukraine's European allies have sent Kiev over 300 modernized Soviet tanks for the fight against Russia. But this is the first time any Western country is sending its own heavy armor to Ukraine. Since the beginning of the Russian offensive in the country almost a year ago, the U.S. and Europe have provided Kiev with large consignments of heavy weaponry and imposed waves of unprecedented economic sanctions on Moscow. Author and politician Christoph Hörstel offers his take on the UK's plan to supply heavy weaponry for Ukraine.
So the European governments, solely on Washington's request, are in fact in a race, in a bloody race, who delivers first the heavy tank armor for Kiev. And that is happening around the whole war. We are doing this against Russia, and that is stupid. And it's a corrupt war started by Kiev on very, very bad reasons. And Washington is pushing us to that. And what happened? Poland sent Leopard 2 tanks first. And then now came London with their Challenger 2 tank. And now there's pressure on the German government mounting, who wanted to send 40 Marders, light armored tank, and now are under very, very high pressure from inside Europe, from Washington, to deliver Leopard 2 tanks directly to Kiev. And it is not good for the people. It's not good for the conflict. Zelensky is forbidden to hold peace talks with Russia by Washington. And this kind of situation is really crazy. It's all against European interests. In the town of Soledar, Russia has claimed a very decisive victory in Donbas. And that's a very, very decisive victory. So what happens? Of course, Kiev cannot win this war. And all the rest is stupid, crazy propaganda of warmongers in Washington. And the future development is bankruptcy in Germany and elsewhere.
Sweden takes over the rotating presidency of the European Union with a vow to oppose Russia and support Ukraine. Critics say the EU's foreign policy towards Moscow is set to backfire even further during 2023. Jerome Hughes reports.
Stockholm's government has just taken over the rotating presidency of the European Union. It holds the position for the next 6 months and faces many challenges. Amid the conflict in Ukraine, the powers that be in Moscow have been singled out.
This is the peaceful order that the Putin regime now seeks to destroy, but we will defend it here and in Ukraine and everywhere.
Many analysts say the EU has shot itself in the foot by provoking and isolating Russia at Washington's behest. Accommodation, food and energy prices remain extremely high in the EU. The European Parliament has just published results of a survey which shows cost of living is the number one concern for citizens.
Of course, I'm looking to go in and buy my own house at the moment. That's bit difficult to decide. Is it a good time? Is it not a good time?
Is the reliance on food banks is shocking. Even for people in full-time employment, like police officers, teachers.
For instance, Brussels, I think, is the city of trainees, of interns who try to start your career. And, for instance, you can have an internship that is not paid, and what you do?
The EU has sent €50 billion to Ukraine during the past 10 months, mostly to provide deadly weapons. Critics say the West wants to feed the arms industry and then make huge profits for Western companies when it finally comes to picking up the pieces.
We are preparing for Ukraine's reconstruction. The international donors platform that we set up with our G7 partners will be up and running this month.
Anti-war activists say many problems could have been averted if Moscow's security concerns had been listened to by NATO and the EU. Tourism industry representatives are asking the European Commission to intervene because in some EU countries, one-third of all rooms being offered by hotels and guest houses are currently being occupied by Ukrainian refugees. There's concern the bloc's tourism sector will be decimated this summer if the issue is not resolved. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Peru declares a state of emergency in the capital, Lima, and three other regions due to anti-government protests. The measure will be in force for 30 days. It authorizes the army to intervene to maintain order and suspend several constitutional rights, such as freedom of movement and assembly. Peru has been the scene of demonstrations since December following the ouster of former President Pedro Castillo. He is currently in pre-trial detention for attempting to dissolve Congress to avoid an impeachment. The protesters want his release and the removal of the current president, Dina Boluarte. Violent protests have so far left 42 people dead and hundreds injured. U.S. police brutality takes another victim. Unarmed black man Keenan Anderson died hours after he was repeatedly tasered and restrained by Los Angeles police following a traffic accident.
Get out of the car now! Get down over there! Yes, sir. Turn over on your stomach right now! Yes. Turn over on your stomach right now! Turn over!
Yes. Please don't do this, sir! Please! Help me, please!
You know what?
Help me, please! No, please, help me! Help me, please! Please, 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 please!
You're trying to jaw floor me. You're trying to jaw
floor me. Stop it, I'm gonna tase you. I'm gonna tase him.
You're trying to kill me!
You're trying to kill me!
Leave me alone!
Stop it!
Anderson, 31 years old, was a teacher and a father. He was also the cousin of Black Lives Matter co-founder. Anderson went into cardiac arrest several hours after this encounter on January 3rd. Los Angeles police released body camera footage of the incident after a sparked outcry. They say Anderson tried to run away after the car crash. The cause of the death has not been officially determined. The Black Lives Matter movement says Anderson was killed by police. His death brings to three the number of people killed in encounters with LA police in less than a week. Police brutality against black people is a source of public outcry in the U.S. We earlier talked to a professor of race, ethnicity, class, and gender, Danielle Shaw, on racism and the police killings in America.
We have to continue to visit police brutality in America because racism, American, is apple pie, as is white supremacy, segregation, police terrorism. Keenan Anderson should be returning after this Martin Luther King Day long weekend to the 10th grade with his students. He was a highly beloved English teacher. There was an accident that his vehicle was involved in, a very traumatic accident. But the police don't know how to handle any of these situations with any type of social work skills, with any type of compassion. They see a black man and they start tasing or shooting first and asking questions later. There's no reason that Keenan Anderson had to be murdered in this way. And it wasn't just Keenan Anderson. To start 2023, Oscar Leon, who was having a mental health crisis in an abandoned building in LA, the police tracked him down and murdered him. None of these individuals who were killed posed any threat to the LAPD. Takar Smith was killed as well. Valentina Peralta was buying a quinceañera dress, and where is she today? Her family had to bury her at 14 years of age because of LAPD bullets. So this continues to be a pandemic of police violence against black and brown communities across this country. How telling that Keenan Anderson's last words were, "Don't George Floyd me," precisely what they did.
U.S. President Joe Biden has declared a major disaster in the state of California as devastating storms there bring heavy flooding. Biden ordered federal aid to supplement local recovery efforts. The declaration makes federal funding available for relief of affected people, including temporary housing and repairs. Nearly 26 million Californians remain under flood, which is tens of thousands under evacuation orders and advisories. Weather forecasters say that the unsettled weather in western U.S. is not done yet. In the last 3 weeks, at least 19 people are known to have died from storm-related causes. Israeli forces have killed another Palestinian in the occupied West Bank. The 45-year-old man, identified as Ahmad Hassan Khali, was killed in the town of Silwat. Israeli authorities claim that he was shot while carrying out a stabbing attack. His son was also injured and arrested by Israeli troops. Israel has stepped up attacks in the occupied territories over the past several months. Regime forces have killed 13 Palestinians in the West Bank since the beginning of the year. Last year's death toll of around 150 was the highest since 2004. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian has visited Syria. Coming from Lebanon, the top diplomat held meetings with top officials covering regional and international developments related to the Syrian crisis. Our correspondent, Muhammad Ali, has the details.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian met Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus. Assad said Syria is keen on maintaining continuous coordination with Iran, especially now amid rapid regional and international developments. He reiterated that Syria will not press ahead with talks with Turkey unless the goal was to end Turkish occupation in Syria and the support of terrorist organizations. Abdullahian said any serious dialogue between Syria and Turkey is a positive step for both countries and the region, expressing Iran's trust in Syria's stances and decisions. The top Iranian diplomat held separate talks with his Syrian counterpart, Faisal al-Maqdad, focusing on expanding economic and trade relations between both countries. In a joint press conference, Abdullahian touched upon Syrian-Iranian economic ties.
Our relations with Syria are at their best condition. We must exert our utmost efforts to boost economic ties to the level of our political ones. We agreed to prepare a long-term strategic cooperation document to be signed in the near future.
He indicated to Iran's role in preventing a planned Turkish military operation in northern Syria, welcoming diplomatic efforts for ending disputes between the two neighbors. Miqdad said the visit comes at a critical time amid challenges facing Syria.
The visit comes as we face challenges set by the U.S., the West, Israel, and their proxies. They don't want the Syrian people to heal. Our relations with Iran are strategic, and soon there will be steps taken that prove the depth of relations and both countries' belief in the necessity of enhancing them.
Miqdad said Syria will not forget the repeated Israeli aggressions, promising at the right time Syria will respond and inflict heavy losses on Israel in a way it will regret all its attacks. Amir Abdullahian's visit is part of a regional tour aimed at evaluating developments with Iran's allies. It's a reminder of the strong ties among member states of the resistance alliance, despite decades-long attempts to break them by their enemies. Muhammad Ali, Damascus.
An Iranian national with a British passport has been executed for spying for the UK government in, quote, extensive action against Iran's national security. Ali Reza Akhbari was sentenced to death more than 2 years after he was arrested. According to a court ruling, Akhbari began working with the UK spy agency MI6 under the guise of research and trade activities. He had numerous meetings with UK agents in different countries over a long period. He passed on intelligence on key issues, including Iran's domestic and foreign policies, as well as missile and defense programs. Akhbari also gave the UK information about nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, who was assassinated in November 2020. Britain has reacted to the execution, saying it will temporarily withdraw its ambassador from Tehran, among other measures.
The UK government made it clear that we would respond, and therefore in response to this execution, we have summoned the Iranian chargé d'affaires. We have imposed sanctions against the prosecutor general, and we have also decided to temporarily withdraw our ambassador for further consultations.
James Cleverly says Britain's response will not necessarily be limited to these measures, and the country will try to deter similar action by Iran. Earlier, Iran's foreign ministry summoned the British ambassador to Tehran to lodge protests against what it called uncustomary UK interventions in matters concerning Iran's national security. That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Men and women as human beings are completely equal in Islam. This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, meeting with hundreds of prominent Iranian women in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on January 4, 2023. Up until this moment, this meeting has been exclusively devoted to women and has been overflowing with outstanding excellent ideas. The talks given by the women here were very good, and I personally truly benefited from them. Some recommendations were made. God willing, a solution will be found for these matters. These matters, they need to be discussed there or in other places, especially the issue of employing our intelligent, skilled, experienced, knowledgeable, scholarly, wise, perceptive women in different places in the country where decisions are made. This is an important matter. Of course, this issue has occupied my mind too. We need to find a solution for this. God willing, we shall find a way. We will see what can be done. Well, you heard many good things from these women today. Before I forget, I would also like to admire this song that the children sang today. It was truly praiseworthy. Both the song and the music were very good, and it was performed very well. I would like to thank all those involved in it. I would like to address a few points about the issue of women today. They are some important points in my opinion. I may have mentioned them before, or perhaps you may have spoken about them, but it is still good to emphasize them. I have talked about this here before to the scholarly women of Iran and also to those who listen to these talks.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
On the issue of women, our stance toward hypocritical Western claimants is a position of demand, not defense. There was a time many years ago when a number of students in a university asked me, "What do you have to say for yourself in defense of such and such case?" I told them, "I don't have a defense. I have the right to be on the offensive." It is the same when it got to the issue of women. The world is to blame. When I say the world, I am referring to the Western world, Western philosophy, and the existing Western culture. Of course, what I'm talking about is the modernized West. I am not concerned with the historical West. That is a different matter. The modernized West is the one that has been expressing its opinion on all aspects of life for the last 200 years. We demand answers from them. They are guilty with regard to the issue of women. They are to blame. They have truly done harm. They have committed crimes. Therefore, the things I am saying are not in defense. We are expressing the Islamic viewpoint and beliefs. This is the Islamic stance. Up until this moment, this meeting has been exclusively devoted to women and has been overflowing with outstanding excellent ideas. The talks given by the women here were very good, and I personally truly benefited from them.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've
fires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Since the war broke out in Ukraine and Western countries rushed to help Ukraine against Russia, they provided Ukraine with different types of weapons in a bid to prevent Russia's rapid military advance. But it has now turned out that the war has been a unique opportunity for Western arms manufacturers to make a profit. According to a report based on data from the Defense News and TradingView Analytics, major Western arms manufacturers involved in military supplies to Ukraine, earned $124 billion last year. According to estimates, the corporation's combined market capitalization increased from $579 billion in December 2021 to $703 billion in December 2022. The ranking included 25 companies with a capitalization of over $1 billion, which are traded on the stock market and have military products dominating their revenues. These companies are actively involved in arms supplies to Ukraine. German arms manufacturer Rheinmetall has been the top gainer over the last 12 months. Its share price has surged 122%. Another notable example is French drone and missile producer Thales, whose stock value rose by 54%. American military contractor Northrop Grumman was up 44%, and the stock of HIMARS rocket launchers maker Lockheed Martin gained 42%. Other notable mentions in the report include BAE Systems, Kongsberg, Gruppen, General Dynamics, and Raytheon Technologies.
Rather than continuing to build up offensive capability by transferring weapons from the American side to the Ukrainian side, which enriches American defense contractors and only allows more Ukrainians and more Russians to bleed, more and more weapons will eventually lead to an escalation of the war, and that is extremely dangerous.
The report comes amid increasing military support for Ukraine. In 2022, the Biden administration committed more than $19 billion in military aid to Ukraine. It's set to give Ukraine another $45 billion in 2023. Washington is now seeking to deliver Patriot missile systems to Ukraine. The U.S. is now set to train scores of Ukrainian troops on how to deploy and maintain the American Patriot missile systems.
The training will prepare approximately 90 to 100 Ukrainian soldiers to operate, maintain, and sustain the defensive system over a training course expected to last several months. And once fielded, the Patriot will continue to contribute to Ukraine's air defense capabilities and provide another capability to the Ukrainian people to defend themselves against Russia's ongoing aerial assaults.
The Kremlin has said the systems and any crews accompanying them would be legitimate priority targets for the Russian military. The U.S. is now contemplating delivering Stryker armored vehicles to Ukraine as part of a new Pentagon shipment. Furthermore, the U.K. announced that it would provide Ukraine with main battle tanks, and Poland said it would transfer a company of Leopard 2 Panzers to Kiev. Germany has, however, to greenlight Poland's re-export of the hardware. Germany says it will follow the U.S. President Joe Biden's lead on whether to support Kiev with Leopard 2 main battle tanks. Germany has faced mounting pressure to provide Ukraine with Leopard 2 tanks, but has been reluctant to do so. Russia has repeatedly warned Western countries against sending arms to Ukraine. Russia has repeatedly warned the West against flooding Ukraine with weapons. It insists that sending more weapons to Ukraine will only prolong the war, while prompting the Kiev forces to kill civilians in the pro-Moscow regions.
Police in Brazil have detained some 1,500 supporters of former President Jair Bolsonaro over attacks on government buildings at the weekend, as calls for justice and accountability grow across the South American nation. Most of the former far-right leader's backers were detained when law enforcement forces dismantled a protest camp in the capital, Brasilia, which many demonstrators set off from on Sunday before breaking into Congress, the Supreme Court, and the presidential palace. The administration of Brazil's new left-wing president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, who was officially sworn in on January 1st, has pledged to investigate those behind the violence and hold them to account. Supreme Court Justice Alexandre de Moraes, who is running investigations of the anti-democratic protests, vowed in a speech on Tuesday to combat what he called the terrorists at work in Brasilia. Rioters broke windows, toppled furniture, and hurled computers and printers to the ground as they ransacked the government buildings on Sunday. They destroyed precious works of art, overturned the U-shaped table where Supreme Court justices convene, ripped a door off one justice's office, and vandalized a statue outside the court. Lula denounced what he called far-right acts of terrorism as he met the leaders of both houses of Congress and the head of the Supreme Court. He had also blamed Bolsonaro for instigating his supporters after a campaign of baseless allegations about the October election results. Lula has vowed to bring to justice those responsible for what he called the fascist assault and declared federal intervention in public security in the capital lasting until January 31st. The riot came after Lula, who previously served as Brazil's president from 2003 to 2010, narrowly defeated Bolsonaro in a hard-fought presidential election runoff on October 30th. Bolsonaro is a former army captain who has expressed admiration for the military regime that ruled Brazil from 1964 to 1985. For months, he had falsely claimed the country's electronic voting system was vulnerable to fraud. Sunday's riot in Brasilia also drew parallels to the January 6, 2021 riot at the U.S. Capitol, which saw a mob of former President Donald Trump's supporters storm the legislature in an effort to stop Congress from certifying his successor Joe Biden's election victory. Brazilian police were noticeably slow to react to the riot in Brasilia, even after the arrival of more than 100 buses, leading many to question whether authorities had either simply ignored numerous warnings, underestimated the protesters' strength, or been somehow complicit. Prosecutors in the capital said local security forces were negligent at the very least. In Brazil's capital on Sunday, thousands of protesters attacked government institutions in a dangerous echo of the United States' January 6 insurrection. Bolsonaro, dubbed as Tropical Trump, has questioned the credibility of the country's electronic voting system without providing evidence. Lula was sworn in on January 1st, unleashing a barrage of rebuke against Bolsonaro for what he called his predecessor's mishandling of Brazil's affairs during his mandate. There have been claims of the CIA involvement in what is seen as a failed coup in Brazil. If true, why would the CIA attempt to do so? To be sure, the CIA does have a long track record of staging coups in Latin America, but it has done so with the intent of dismantling leftist governments and installing far-right regimes. Brazil is set to reassert itself in global geopolitics alongside fellow BRICS states Russia, India, and China. Lula at the helm in Brazil, in what is now his third non-successive presidential term, will offer a tremendous boost to BRICS. In the 2000s, Lula was a key conceptualizer of a deeper role for BRICS, including trade in their own currencies. The U.S. is being slowly but surely expelled from wider Eurasia by concerted actions of the Russia-China strategic partnership. Ukraine is a black hole, where NATO faces a humiliation similar to what the U.S. faced in Afghanistan, a feeble EU being forced by Washington to deindustrialize and buy U.S. liquefied natural gas at absurdly high cost as no essential resources for the empire to plunder. Geoeconomically, that leaves the U.S.-denominated Western Hemisphere, especially immense energy-rich Venezuela, as the key target. And geopolitically, the key region actor is Brazil. The U.S. would seemingly try to pull all stops to prevent Chinese and Russian trade expansion and political influence in Latin America, which Washington, irrespective of international law and the concept of sovereignty, continues to call its backyard. U.S. airstrikes in Somalia increased 30% in 2022 as the Biden administration increased U.S. involvement in the Horn of Africa country that is experiencing a new wave of fighting between the government and Al-Shabaab terrorists. In 2022, the Pentagon carried out 15 airstrikes on Al-Shabaab. According to data from the U.S. Africa Command, these strikes resulted in the death of at least 107 terrorists. The U.S. has conducted military operations against Al-Shabaab in Somalia since 2007. AFRICOM estimates the group has 5,000 to 10,000 fighters across the country of 15 million, controlling large swathes of land in southern and central Somalia. On Saturday, Somalia's government claimed for the first time that Al-Shabaab called for open negotiations with the government as it conducts a military offensive against the group it described as a total war. The uptick in fighting between Al-Shabaab and government forces has come as the country experiences a fresh wave of attacks. This shows that the U.S. so-called counterterrorism military operations in Somalia have yielded few results. Despite the U.S. attacks, Al-Shabaab has proven resilient and is still able to carry out attacks in the country. Al-Shabaab recently claimed responsibility for a twin suicide car bombing in Somalia's Hiran region that killed around 20 people. Last year was a particularly bloody one. More than 100 people died in October when two car bombs exploded at a busy Mogadishu intersection. In August, Al-Shabaab launched a days-long siege on a Mogadishu hotel that left more than 20 people dead. In 2020, former U.S. President Donald Trump's administration moved to withdraw all 700 American troops from Somalia after a three-decade presence in the country. Soon after the Biden administration came into office, it reversed the Trump move. And in May 2022, U.S. officials said the president approved a plan to redeploy troops to Somalia. Some U.S. lawmakers have raised concerns about the U.S. military campaign in Somalia, which has been carried out on the grounds of the 2001 Authorization for the Use of Military Force, passed following the 9/11 terror attacks. Successive U.S. administrations have used the AUMF as a pretext to approve military action in countries like Afghanistan, Yemen, and Djibouti, despite no formal declaration of war by Congress. In December, Democratic Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs and Senator Elizabeth Warren sent a letter to the Pentagon arguing that the Defense Department was undercounting civilian casualties in Somalia. The U.S. Congress is the branch of the American government that has the authority to declare war. Despite Congress not having declared war in Somalia, the Biden administration has used the 2001 Authorization for the Use of Military Force to bypass restrictions. The 2001 AUMF has been used by successive administrations to justify military operations against a number of groups. In at least 19 countries, including Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Libya, Somalia, and Yemen. Today, the authorization for the use of military force is the legal basis used to justify all current wars. For this reason, it is called the blank check for the endless wars. And while the Biden administration has signaled it supports ending the different 2002 AUMF specifically for Iraq, it has not shown any support for revoking the wider-ranging 2001 AUMF, despite calls from the lawmakers. In August, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin lauded the country's military operations in Africa, saying it works alongside our friends as full partners to strengthen bonds, to tackle common threats, and to advance a shared vision of an Africa whose people are safe and prosperous. But a recent report from the Pentagon's Africa Center for Strategic Studies contradicts this. The report says terrorist group violence in Africa has risen inexorably over the past decade, expanding by 300% during this time. The U.S. has spent roughly $2.5 billion on security assistance for Somalia since 2009. It has also conducted at least 265 airstrikes since 2007. However, despite years of military presence in Africa, U.S. has failed to combat extremists and terrorists. The British royal family may appear to be prim and proper to the public. However, they have faced their fair share of controversies over the years. From the separation of Charles and Diana in 1992, and the famous comment of the late Princess of Wales that there were three of us in this marriage, so it was a bit crowded, to the Megxit when Prince Harry and Meghan Markle stepped down from their royal duties. Now, few years into the new year, the royals are on the back foot. The Duke of Sussex's tell-all memoir, with its bombshell revelations, has turned into a big challenge for the monarchy. Prior to the official publishing of the book, multiple media outlets reported they had secured copies of Harry's autobiography. Among the jaw-dropping claims is Harry's reported retelling of his scuffle with his brother, Prince William, in 2019, his use of cocaine as a teenager, and killing 25 people in Afghanistan when he was a helicopter pilot in the country. He also said he confronted discrimination and neglect from the royal household from a younger age. While Buckingham Palace has kept silent, Harry's revelations have drawn mixed reactions. Some have denounced Prince Harry's tell-all memoir for putting family arguments out there for the world to see. They say Harry's account will be damaging to the monarchy and undermines the king at a time when he is trying to show the institution is modernizing. Others say they sympathize with the sibling rivalry the prince describes and other elements of his experience. The fact is, the British monarchy is by its very nature hierarchical, and this has led to Harry feeling like his spare part. A former royal biographer has said he is perplexed by Harry's memoirs, saying it contains the kind of revelations you would expect from a B-list celebrity. Meanwhile, the royal analyst and biographer of King Charles, Catherine Mayer, has said Prince Harry's book could be the beginning of the end of the monarchy, given the lack of trust in the state at the moment. She said anger over racism, misogyny, and wealth in the royal family can undermine public consent for a monarchy. Survey results over the years show that younger people are less likely than older people to say that it is important that Britain has a monarchy. Indeed, just 14% of under 35-year-olds take that view compared with 44% of those aged 55 and over. This suggests support for monarchy will decline as today's older generation is replaced by younger Britons. Revelations in Prince Harry's newly published book include the murder of 25 people in Afghanistan while serving with the British Army in the country. The 38-year-old described killing targets as moving chess pieces, noting that he was not ashamed of doing so. High-profile British veterans have criticized Prince Harry and warned the high-profile admission could increase the risk to his personal security. Retired Army veteran Colonel Tim Collins said the prince's kill count talk was crass, and we don't do notches on the rifle butt. Others said Harry had appeared wrongly to dehumanize those he killed by describing them as chess pieces removed from the board. That's while the Taliban have accused the prince of committing war crimes on his military tour in Afghanistan. Abdul Qahar Balkhi, the spokesperson for the Taliban-led Afghan Foreign Affairs Ministry, described the Western occupation of Afghanistan as a horrible moment in human history, saying comments by Harry is a microcosm of the trauma experienced by Afghans at the hands of occupation forces who murdered innocent people without any accountability. Last year, an investigation revealed commandos in the UK's elite Special Air Service Corps killed at least 54 Afghans in suspicious circumstances during a six-month tour of Helmand Province from November 2010 to May 2011, but the military chain of command concealed concerns. The investigation found that unarmed Afghan men were routinely shot dead in cold blood by SAS troops during nighttime raids during the long war in Afghanistan, and weapons were planted on them to justify crimes. In 2001, the US and its close allies, including the UK, invaded Afghanistan under the pretext of fighting Al-Qaeda. The invasion preceded by over two decades of war in Afghanistan and cost 241,000 lives.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone. This is IRB English Radio and...
Assalamu alaikum. This is your station.
Yes, Bita. I am Asma. Bita and I are going to have an episode today.
And we are at lovely home.
Of course. Unusual. Everyone is back home and tutu kichu again.
Come on. What about a copyright? I don't know. You are copying this kind
of
expression.
No, Brother Muzaffar actually loves that. Yes. Nice. He always says you have to say it when I'm not here. So I'm doing that in his place.
Yeah, I didn't know that you are the candidate of him.
I have that right.
Thank God.
So, we are getting close to some very lovely months of Rajab, Sha'ban, and Ramadan. And of course, in the month of Rajab, in the middle of it, we have the ritual of i'tikaf. So I know there's actually still a lot of days for Rajab to come, but usually when the month of Rajab comes, we are so much preoccupied with the fact of getting ready for the holy month of Ramadan, and then we actually are doing the ritual, so we might not have enough of time to think about the philosophy of it.
Exactly.
So we're doing it in advance in order to get much more of readiness to go through those holy months of Rajab, Sha'ban, and Ramadan. So
first of all, let's give a kind of, explanation
definition.
And definition for these etiquette to the listeners. You know that.
Of course. See, actually, i'tikaf was a ritual that started from the time of the Prophet. It is some days of seclusion.
Mm-hmm.
It was 10 days, and then it was reduced to 3 days. And still, some people do the 10 days.
Exactly, do it 10 days.
It's a spiritual experience, and many mystics might go through that in their life. But now, the ordinary people also have got the chance to go through it in 3 days of the middle of the month of Rajab. And also, we have it in Ramadan. And also, some people do it in Sha'ban as well. So, there are different rituals for that.
Exactly.
But the whole definition of it is seclusion. Getting secluded, and I would love to call it this way, getting at once with Allah.
This is a beautiful definition for i'tikaf. Unfortunately, I haven't experienced this kind of beautiful spiritual
opportunity.
Yeah,
it is very beautiful.
But, you know, I think this is an opportunity that we don't have in modern life, especially. You know, because we are struggling with day-to-day life, I don't know, with education, working, so on. Even, I don't know, being in youth station, you know what. And we don't have enough time for just thinking about other relation we have with God. With, I don't know, every spiritual aspect of our
religion. So, you know, there's this thing which is very beautiful. Ever since I was a child, I love to see this ritual getting held in every mosque that was close to our home. You know, this is the nice thing about it is that all the youngsters go there and they carry a bundle or a bag. They carry their things with themselves. And then all they carry is actually some dress and some special things like this. They do not take any attachment of mundane life with them into the mosques. You know, it's the time that they cloister themselves in the mosque in order to get closer to their Lord, which is very lovely and very nice. Even the feeling of it is very nice because for 3 days, you have nothing more than God to think about and to be preoccupied with.
Exactly. And, you know, one thing I didn't know is that there isn't any special month for i'tikaf. You know, we can do it in every time. But especially we do it in Ramadan because, I don't know, it's somehow, I don't know, more beautiful. And I've seen it, I don't know, in a mosques around my hometown that all of the people go in these i'tikaf and, you know, they participate in that. I always wanted to do that, but I always had a school and my mother just told me, no, you have to go to school. You cannot be absent and so on. And I was just like, I want to go. Right now, I understand that at that time, I didn't understand the value of this beautiful opportunity that we have. You know, it's something more than being 3 days apart from the world.
Now, let us go for a short break, and after that, I will tell you something nice.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So this is Youth Station. Well, I am Asma, and in here I have Beta on my side, and we're talking about the very beautiful philosophy of Atikaf, which we already talked about it. The time of seclusion, which is 3 days in the middle of some special holy months, that all the Muslim peoples actually do that. I guess even in other religions, they have some times for a cloister and seclusion. They all have it, all the religions. Because it is, you know, all the religions are based on love and the spirituality and the connection between their Lord. So there must be a time of seclusion that you leave it for Allah himself alone without thinking about anything worldly and mundane. So I promised you that I'm going to tell you something nice.
Exactly. I'm really waiting for that.
See, when all the young people go to the mosques and they experience a beautiful 3 days of cloister and seclusion to their Lord, and they get this spiritual connection, and they come out as purified as the young child that is getting birth, they have a lot of things to say. I remember I was listening to the news, and then this young boy coming out of the mosque, the interviewer asked him, what did you experience there? And then he put it in a very beautiful poem. It was actually Persian, but I'm just going to give you the gist of it. So he said, in these 3 days, I have been through this love and a spiritual connection with Allah. If I cannot get to see him, or, you know, this physical thing that we all have, but we're not going to have it forever because God is actually not visible forever. We as human beings, as these tiny little creatures, are not going to be able to see such a magnificent Lord. So he said that if he cannot see him, then at least they can think about his name and feel the love, get filled with his love. And his get showered with his love in my heart. So that was very nice. It was actually the gist of these 3 days. I think that in these days, all the people get into the mosques and they have too much of burdens on their shoulders. But when they come out, they are purified.
So let me give you my point of view about this issue and etiquette, which is really beautiful in my opinion. I think this opportunity will somehow help you to be superior than what you are right now.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I'm telling you,
You'll go a step higher.
Exactly. We are some normal creatures, normal human beings, which, I don't know, we don't have a special connection with God, or we don't have that much of a high purification in our, I don't know, whatever we do in day-to-day life, for example.
Let me just say it this way. As human beings, whom you already said that we are so much preoccupied with everyday life, sometimes we forget to devote a special time to have a chit-chat with Allah.
And also, sometimes we do that, but we forget, you know, the goal of that, the feeling of connection we have to feel in that.
Yeah.
And then we get used to it. Yeah. For example, just we pray because, I don't know, because we do it every day, we feel like this is a responsibility, nothing more, nothing less. This is the feeling I think we, most of us, have experienced in our lives. And in this opportunity that we have, three days to 10 days, which I prefer 10 days, I don't know why, I want it to be too long to experience all the feelings and all of the thoughts that I want to do in day-to-day life, but I cannot or I don't have the time. It offers us this beautiful, actually, scene to go and play in that. And just get too close to God, to the thinking, to the concept of God.
Exactly.
You know what? Yeah. We cannot reach God. We cannot touch him. We cannot see him.
Exactly.
We cannot, I don't know, whatever.
But we can feel him and his love.
Exactly.
We can. So this is what happens in the mosque
but,
during the attack.
You know, why we cannot feel it in, I don't know, day-to-day life? Because there are more wives, so many people, so many issues. Yeah. Then, you know, they disturb us.
A lot of distractions are
exactly,
in the middle.
Exactly, from getting close to God. But yeah. this situation, this beautiful, tiny place that you have in mosques, and even these mosques have the atmosphere that, you know, a kind of spiritual place have.
And there's another thing, you know, all the people that go in there, they do not know each other. But when they come out, they have built up a relationship like families.
This is so beautiful, too.
This is so nice.
And I think one of the things which is really beautiful in this opportunity is that more than being familiar to other people in that 3 days, the changes that you will face after these 3 days is
exactly.
so beautiful,
too. Exactly, in your own personality.
Exactly.
It's going to be vivid when you come out. Mm.
Because, you know, you are apart from a materialistic world.
And tell you something, I could relate to their feeling because every time we go to holy shrines, you see, when we get in, we are this nagging, frustrated, fed up person.
Depressed
and when we come out, we feel like every problem in this materialistic world is so tiny compared to the passion that you feel there. Everything looks actually more vivid.
Exactly.
The things that I used not to see or used to ignore, when I come out, I see beauty in them.
You know, there is a special life
in
that sort of experiences, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, I want to experience that, actually.
Inshallah. That would be great.
Yeah,
that would be great. Don't forget to pray for us as well.
Yeah, I'm really inspired now
after
this kind of beautiful discussion.
Now my heart is broken. Okay, let's go for a short break and we'll be back.
Okay.
We are talking about i'tikaf. It is going to be a very lovely, lovely, lovely occasion. And I'm sure that if you go there, you would never forget that experience. The nights of Qadr that come in the holy month of Ramadan have the same feeling as i'tikaf. See, the thing that we are talking about mainly is the changes that are going to happen to my characteristics. Mm-hmm. Before that, I'm another person. And when I come after that, I'm totally a different person.
This, you know, I have a beautiful memory with these nights at in Ramadan. Because, you know, my mother always told me that in these nights, when there is a kind of wind or something like that in the yard of our home, it is the wind that is made by the wings of angels.
Oh, my God,
which is,
that's so nice.
Yeah, this is so beautiful. Angels. And
so poetic.
Really
your mother puts
that. I really believe in that. I thought every wind is made of that kind of you know, emotions of the wings of that angels, and I was really surprised. Oh my gosh, so they are there, they are listening to me, and these kind of illusions,
they are moving their wings now toward us.
It was really beautiful for me, and because of that memories I have a beautiful feeling about that.
So just imagine what happens in those mosques, you know, before people getting into there. The people who are actually taking care of the mosque are going to get it ready, prepare things for all the people who are getting inside. So it's a, you know, all the people are doing something and they're going through too much of emotions and feelings, and
that's
so nice, you know.
And you know, let us, you know, see it from another perspective. You told something beautiful. You know, the people who just work in the mosques, you know, they will experience another atmosphere, another vibe from people in these days.
And for sure, they might have a lot of stories to tell.
Exactly.
Because people in these 3 days are going... Now, there's different types of connection that we're creating to Allah. Sometimes you go there for a special thing that you want from him, you know? You make a wish, a certain wish. For example, you know, some people, they have some strange sicknesses. They want Allah to just cure
to
them. So they go there to pray for their families. Some of them, they have some very terrible issues. When they get into the mosque, and some of them, when they come out, they see that the problems are solved and all their wishes have come
miracle,
true.
This is miracle, I think.
Yeah, like, of course. And it happens, you know.
Yeah.
It happens to many people.
Yeah, exactly.
It is nothing far-fetched or whatever. Sometimes you have to go through special experiences in order to